Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Can you hear okay? Particularly at the back there, you can hear all right? Okay. Because we asked for an extension, we didn't get one, so otherwise we put the speaker up on the front. Anyway, it's down here, so. Oh, is that it? Yeah. You want to see what can be done? Let's see what can be done. Agile. So how to do that? Just a moment. Anyway, let me just set the scene a bit.
We're just going to cut for a couple minutes, seconds.
Oh, really? So on Wednesday, is Ram Nomi. Sri Ram Nomi Mahotsava King. If it can go over there, it'd be best. But anyway, somewhere.
That's it.
All right, you can still hear. So on Wednesday, it's Ram Nomi, and we're having a program here in the evening. As far as I know, it's about 7 o'clock, 6:30, and when I say here, I mean here, right here. We're going to try a bit of Gauteng technology to suspend a light or a couple of lights or something like that around from the trees. And we'll just have the program here. Is that okay? It'll probably be a little cool, so come prepared in terms of dress. And Vrajavasi Prabhu, 6:30, what time? 6:30. 6:30 kirtan. Six to 6:30 kirtan. 6:30 till 9 o'clock class. Okay. 6:30 until, you know, whenever. We'll have a class about Loka. Yes, okay, that's nice. Right now though, we'll read from Srimad Bhagavatam. From the 10th chapter of the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is titled The Pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. And we'll read a few verses. Actually, I'm going to read from verse 4 to verse 8. And these are mainly dealing with the earlier pastimes of Lord Ram, up to the time of the exile, or thereabouts, plus or minus. And we're going to continue tomorrow, for those who would like, who are able, who have reserved, I guess. And so we'll continue tomorrow, same time, same place, with further pastimes of Lord Ram. And then again on Wednesday, we will continue. It's the main day for more pastimes of Lord Ram. So In this way, we can get focused on Lord Ram. It's a very nice way to do it for a few days or nights before, to build up to the particular special occasion, whatever it may be. So that's what we're going to do. And so please come along, please come along. And next will be, when is Lord Nrisimhadev's appearance day? Does anyone remember offhand? May the 3rd. Oh. 23rd. Anyway, 25, yeah? It's these masks, you know. It's hard to get. 25th, is it? I see, that's good. Well, I wonder what. That's a Tuesday then. Right. I see. So we'll do the same thing. We'll do the same thing. That's a Tuesday. Then we'll do Saturday, Sunday. We can do Monday also. Why not? For the appearance day of Lord Nrisimhadev, also famous for being the disappearance day of Hiranyakashipu. So, in Krishna consciousness, there's so much auspiciousness around. It's just great. All right, so now let us read these verses then. Ninth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 10, Pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, verses 4 to 8. And 4, well, it's not entirely chronological. I mean, it's vaguely chronological, but not completely. So we do go back and forth a little bit in terms of the pastimes and the chronology. All right, so we begin with verse 4, and it's an extraordinary verse in that the Sanskrit is very complex, so I won't read the Sanskrit, but when we get through, I think, anyway, a few more verses, then I'll read some Sanskrit. So please listen carefully. It's really very, very nice. To keep the promise of his father intact, Lord Ramachandra immediately gave up the position of king and, accompanied by his wife mother Sita, wandered from one forest to another on his lotus feet, which were so delicate that they were unable to bear even the touch of Sita's palms. The Lord was also accompanied by Hanuman, king of the monkeys. And then a little footnote, or by another monkey, Sugriva, and by his own younger brother, Lord Lakshman, both of whom gave him relief from the fatigue of wandering in the forest. Having cut off the nose and ears of Shurpanakha, thus disfiguring her, the Lord was separated from Mother Sita. He therefore became angry, moving his eyebrows, and thus frightening the ocean, who then allowed the Lord to construct a bridge to cross the ocean. Subsequently, the Lord entered the kingdom of Ravana to kill him, like a fire devouring a forest. May that Supreme Lord, Ramachandra, give us all protection. So I think from here we're going to go slightly back in time. Yeah, we are actually. But let me just mention one thing right from the outset about this verse. This is 9th Canto, chapter 10, verse 4. That at the end of the verse, as we just read right now, The Sanskrit is avatat naha, which means, avatat means be pleased to protect naha us. So may that Supreme Lord Ramachandra give us all protection. Give us all of us protection. And give us all protection. Total protection. This is nice. This is one of not a large number of verses at all. But there's a few, just a few here and there. Throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, just here and there, I couldn't say how many, but I would imagine it's not more than 10 verses. In the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, something like 10 maybe, in which the speaker, in this case, Srila Shukadeva Goswami, is offering blessings, ashirvad. He's offering the listeners blessings. And that's very nice. He's not exactly offering us blessings, but he's asking the Lord to bless us. That's actually what he's doing. May the Supreme Lord Ramachandra give us all protection. And we can know, you know, it depends on the person asking. But when a person like Shukadeva Goswami asks, then we must know that the Lord recognizes, listens, and will do as requested, definitely. If it's just some ordinary person and they say, oh, God bless us, or God bless you, then you never know, but it's not so likely that that God is going to bless you, because they don't have that connection. They don't have that connection that someone like Shukadeva Goswami has. He's very, very strongly connected. So this is very nice. I like this verse for that reason, and it's just a nice verse anyway. But particularly for that reason, the Lord has been requested by his very close associate, Srila Shukadeva Goswami, to bless us, to bless all of us, and to bless us completely. So, or bless us actually to give us protection specifically here. So that's nice. That's something we can meditate on a bit. Then I'll read on. I'll read verse 5 next. Let's have a look. I'll just read the translation. In the arena of sacrifice performed by Vishvamitra, Lord Ramachandra, the king of Ayodhya, killed many demons, rakshasas, and uncivilized men who wander at night in the mode of darkness. May Lord Ramachandra, who killed these demons in the presence of Lakshman, be kind enough to give us protection. Oh, just see. Again. He's requesting that may the Lord be kind enough to give us protection. So it's the same point, obviously, the same point, that when you get blessings from some elevated person, those blessings work. If you get blessings from someone who's, particularly, you know, someone who's not spiritual, they try and give blessings, but it's not going to have any effect. You may have heard the story, just seeing it. It has come to mind. When Srila Prabhupada first visited Germany, 1969, And there was only one devotee in Germany who was a young devotee from America, 18 years old. He had come on his own from America to Germany to preach. And there are a number of problems, but the worst was he didn't speak German. And in those days, and to large extent now even in Germany, but particularly in those days, the people didn't speak English. But Prabhupada came and stayed with him for a few days. I mean, it might have been 5 days or maybe a week like that. And one of the days was Ekadasi. And Srila Prabhupada, he just sat in the little temple room from early morning till 12 and just chanted japa. And when Srila Prabhupada stopped at around 12 and he came back out of the temple room and he asked Krishna Das, will you please pray to Krishna to help me? And Krishna Das didn't know what to say. He became flustered initially and he just couldn't express himself. But then he said, Srila Prabhupada, I don't think Krishna will hear me. And Srila Prabhupada said, No. You're a devotee. Krishna will hear you. Anyway, the more advanced, the more effective are the blessings and prayers for us, or just any prayers. So this is very nice. Two verses in a row, and Shukadev Goswami is praying to Lord Ramachandra to give us all protection, which of course we desperately need in this material world. Let me carry on. This is a nice one. I like this. Well, this is verses 6 and 7. O King, the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra were wonderful, like those of a baby elephant. I don't know if you're familiar with baby elephants. I'm not that much, but I've seen a bit. They're a lot of fun. They've got real character. You know, like huge puppies, you could say. That sort of thing. Yeah. So Lord Ram's pastimes were wonderful, particularly in his early days, like those of a baby elephant. In the assembly where Mother Sita was to choose her husband, in the midst of the heroes of this world, he broke the bow belonging to Lord Shiva. This bow was so heavy that it was carried by 300 men, but Lord Ramachandra bent and strung it and broke it in the middle, just as a baby elephant breaks a stick of sugar cane. Thus the Lord achieved the hand of Mother Sita, who was equally as endowed with transcendental qualities of form, beauty, behavior, age, and nature. Indeed, she was the goddess of fortune, who constantly rests on the chest of the Lord. While returning from Sita's home after gaining her at the assembly of competitors, Lord Ramachandra met Parasuram. Although Parasuram was very proud, having rid the earth of the royal order 21 times, he was defeated by the Lord, who appeared to be a Kshatriya of the royal order. And what should I do now? I'll read verse 8. I'll read the Sanskrit too. Yasatya Pasha Pari. Yasatya Pasha Pari Vita Piturani De Sham. Strainasya Chapi Shirasa Jagrihe Sabarya. Raj Yam Shriyam Pranayana Sriyado Nivasam Tyaktvaya Yova Namasun Iva Mukta Sangha. Carrying out the order of his father, who was bound by a promise to his wife, Lord Ramachandra left behind his kingdom, opulence, friends, well-wishers, residence, and everything else, just as a liberated soul gives up his life, and went to the forest with Sita. And there's a purport here. Maybe I'll come back and read the purport after a little while. I just wanted to say a few things about what has been, some of what has been described so far. First of all, a prayer or two. Nama Om Vishnu Buddhaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharani Niravishesha Shunyavari Pasya Chyadesha Tarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pramanityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vajikavatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha paritanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So there's a few things actually I wanted to note. And the first was, it's actually a very important and a very interesting point, is that, well, we read about Lord Ram participating in the Swayamvara, it is called, Swayamvara ceremony of Mother Sita, in which she chose her husband, or really the winner of the particular, there was the competition was able, well, she was able to choose that person, but if she wanted, she could have chosen someone else too, or just refused that person. Anyway, Lord Ram picked up the bow of Lord Shiva, which, as we read, was so heavy that it had to be carried by 300 men. And not just like 300 of us here, Namacharya Prabhu, Keshav Bharati, Das and company. But these are 300 Kshatriyas, big men, really, big professional warriors. I mean, professional in the sense that they were used to hand combat, so they were just really powerful. And it took 300 of them to pick it up or to move it in any way. So, but Lord Ram picked it up, strung it, and then broke it. But not only that, there's an interesting description, a very interesting description in regard to Mother Sita, in that Janaka Maharaj, the father of Mother Sita, he got that bow, and it was in the palace there, his palace, for some period of time before the Swayamvara happened and before Lord Ram came and picked it up and so on. It was lying there. Well, it was on a sort of a, what would you say, some sort of frame or something like that with wheels on it so it could be wheeled around. And it was sitting there basically on that frame, sort of little carriage type thing with wheels for some time before that Swayamvara happened. So there's very nice description and very important that in that period of however many days or so before the Swayamvara, one of the days, Mother Sita and some of her girlfriends, they were playing a ball game. They were playing a ball game in one of the courtyards, which happened to be the courtyard just right immediately outside where that carriage was with that big bow on it. So they're playing a ball game and throwing the ball back and forward. And there was a tree there in the courtyard, and somehow the ball got caught in the tree. And they couldn't climb up because it was too high and the tree was, you know, wouldn't hold their weight, so someone might fall. They tried shaking, but the ball wouldn't come. They needed something to poke it out, basically to push it out so they could get the ball back. But what to get? They couldn't really find anything suitable. Then Mother Sita said, "Oh, I know. Let's use that bow. Because it was a big bow. And we'll poke it up and knock the ball out." So Mother Sita just walked in and with one hand picked up the bow. With one hand and brought it out and poked the ball out of the tree and then went and put it back. And I was reading about it today or yesterday, I think, and a few guards saw, and they were just, their minds were boggled. Anyway, then shortly thereafter, the Swayamvara ceremony happened, and Lord Ram came, and numerous other princes and members of the royal orders came to compete for the hand, or the possibility at least, of getting the hand of Mother Sita. And one of them who came, was none other than Ravan himself. He was there. And so everyone then had the competition was, you got to lift the bow and then you got to string it. So all these young men, you know, big, powerful young men, they're all trying to lift it. No one could lift it, even, you know, off the carriage. They couldn't move it at all. And the only one, until Lord Ram was the last, until Lord Ram took his turn, the only one who was able to lift it at all was Ravana. And he could only lift it like an inch or something like that. With a tremendous struggle. And then he just couldn't manage. And he just let go of it. And it dropped down. But it dropped down on his fingers. And now Ravana was stuck. And, you know, it's a very, very painful situation. So next turn was Lord Ram, the last one, and Lord Ram came, and with one hand, and actually just with thumb and middle finger, he lifted it up off Ravana's fingers. "Can I help you?" I believe he said, "Can I help you?" And so Ravana escaped. But now, the point here, of course, if you put two and two together, is that some years later, when Ravana kidnapped Mother Sita, he kidnapped her. And she just, she was just overpowered, more or less just like that. And then he flew off with her to Lanka. And then she was imprisoned on Lanka. So it's an interesting point, isn't it? That Mother Sita, with one hand, lifted the bow. Ravana could not lift the bow more than, you know, a couple of inches, and then it got stuck, and he was just in a bit of a desperate situation. But then he kidnapped Mother Sita, and she couldn't do anything. So what does that mean? Well, you know what it does mean, actually. It means that the Mother Sita he kidnapped was not actually Mother Sita. That's the thing. You know, when we come to that pastime, not today, but when we do come to that pastime of the kidnapping, then it's quite clear that she was helpless. She was, whoever it was helpless. And actually, what happened was that the real Sita, it's discussed to some degree in Chaitanya Charitamrita, actually, that when Mother Sita stepped through the mystical, magical circle created by Lakshman, then it was a circle based on fire. Then she, Mother Sita, the actual Mother Sita, she went to Agni Loka, and a Maya Sita appeared on the other side of that circle, and that's who Ravana kidnapped. And that is discussed. There's a whole pastime of Lord Chaitanya's in which he ascertains, it's quite a story actually, he ascertains that it wasn't Sita who was kidnapped. So anyway, what we just talked about the last few minutes illustrates the point that she, who is she? She is the original goddess of fortune. She is the source of Mahalakshmi, actually. She's directly an expansion of Srimati Radharani, the internal potency of the Lord. And as such, she is extremely powerful. Just extremely powerful. And so powerful that Durga Parvati, the presiding deity of material nature, the wife of Lord Shiva, she is a fraction of a fraction of the, how do they put it? A fraction of a fraction of one ray from one toenail of Srimati Radharani. I mean, there's a connection there that counts. But still, a fraction of a fraction of one ray emanating from one toenail of Srimati Radharani. Much less. Whereas Sita is a significant expansion of Srimati Radharani. So the difference in power is astronomical between Durga and Sita Devi. And Ravana is empowered by a fraction of the potency of Durga. She's material nature. He has a material body, means empowered by her with whatever potency she has. And he has not got all of her power, but he's got some. That's what power he has. So how could he overpower the goddess, the original, the source of the goddess of fortune. It's so far out of the question, but not many people know about this. Not many people are aware of this, but it's a very important and a very interesting thing. And then just to add a little further sort of touch of interestingness to it all, that Maya Sita, she's called Maya Sita, the one who Ravana kidnapped. The Maya Sita, when everything was finished, she had become attached to Lord Ram and wanted to become his wife, like second wife after Sita. But Lord Ram had taken Eka Patni Vrata, the vow of accepting only one wife, so couldn't help. So what to do? Well, that Maya Sita was then born as the daughter of the king of somewhere down in South India, I forget. Anyway, one of the big Mahalakshmi temples is right down in South India. I forget offhand the name of the place. And she then married Srinivas, who is Venkateshwar in Tirupati. She became, who is a form of the Lord. So she got her wish fulfilled. She wanted to become the wife of the Lord. So she became the wife of the Lord later as Venkateshwar, Balaji in Tirupati, up on top of the hill there. Well, yes, so I wanted to mention that. A very important point, actually. Who is Mother Sita? She is by no means any ordinary young woman who can just be overpowered by some strong man. Then we read the last verse we read was how Lord Ram accepted the order of his father to go into exile. I'm sure you all know the basic story, how everything sort of unfolds. But Kaikeyi, Dasarath had three wives. Kausalya was the mother of Lord Ram. And then there was Kaikeyi, was the mother of Bharat. And who was the third one? Sumitra. Yeah, was the mother of Shatrughna and Lakshman. Or Bharat and Shatrughna were brothers. Were brothers. Right. Yes, so Kaikeyi saved Dasarath's life in the course of one battle, and he told her that, you saved my life, I owe you my life, tell me what you want, it's yours. And she said, well, I can't think of anything right now. Let me think about it, and later when I'm ready, I'll ask for something. And then later, quite a bit later, when her mind had become poisoned by, what's her name? Mantara, yeah. Who for some reason had become envious of Ram. This hunchback, hunched back, and sort of hunched mind, Mantara, turned her against Lord Ram. that if Ram, because the next day Lord Ram is going to be installed as what they call Prince Regent. I don't know if you noticed, Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, just died. Did you notice? I'm sure you did. And what did I see? I saw something. Charles was installed as Prince Regent like 50 years ago or something. He's been waiting in the wings. And who knows? Anyway, let's not worry about that. But Lord Ram was going to be installed as Prince Regent, which means he's officially going to become the king when the time is right. So the next day, Lord Ram was to be installed as Prince Regent. But then Mantra told Kaikeyi that you can't let this happen because he'll just kill Bharat, your son. And somehow, unfortunately, Kaikeyi became influenced by that. And so then she insisted, or then she came to Dasarath and said, you know, you remember you gave me that boon? Yes, of course. Well, I would like it right now. Yes. What would you like? That tomorrow, instead of installing Ram as Prince Regent, you install Bharat, and he'll become the king. And poor Dasarath was absolutely, absolutely devastated. So here we read, carrying out the order of his father, who was bound by a promise to his wife, Lord Ramachandra left behind his kingdom, opulence, friends, well-wishers, residence, and everything else. Just as a liberated soul gives up his life and went to the forest with Sita. So I was reading today, yesterday and today, when when Ram was told, your father wants to see you, to tell him about this, how he's going to go to exile. When Ram came, then Dasarath was too sort of emotionally paralyzed, mentally paralyzed. He couldn't say anything. And so Kaikeyi, if I remember correctly, told Lord Ram, have I got it? Kaikeyi? I think it was Kaikeyi told him. And she's sort of sneering at him that, yeah, you know, just see. We got the better of you. And, you know, you're not going to become king. But you're going to go into exile for 14 years, just live in the forest. Take that sort of mentality. This is the order of your father. So Lord Ram, she, Kaikeyi, she expressed it like, you know, this is really bad, isn't it? All your plans, all your desires, your future is just gone up in smoke, just like that. So there. And she, her expectation was that Lord Ram was going to be very disturbed and, you know, why, and can't we do something like that? And even Lakshman was in that sort of mood. You know, if when your father gives you an order like that, you must know he's not really your father. So you don't need to worry about it. And Lakshman says, according to the Ramayana, Lakshman says, you know, if I'm sure our father isn't serious in saying that. And if he is, I'll just kill him. Oh, radical. There's a lot of radicalness around. But Lord Ram won't hear of it. And when Kaikeyi says that, you know, there you go, tough luck to you, and you know, you've just got to eat it and forget about anything for this lifetime. What do you think of that? And Lord Ram says, my dear lady, please, what do you think I am? What do you think I am? Let me just read what he says. They say, on the king's order, I am in fact prepared to jump into fire. Commanded by him who is my preceptor, father, king and benefactor, I can drink strong poison or throw myself into the sea. Tell me, my lady, what is the king's request? I shall do it, I promise. Ram does not speak twice. You know, the particular thing about Lord Ram is his sort of his uprightness, his nobleness, his character. Yes, his honesty and morality, extreme strict morality. That is one of the main things, certainly one of the very main things which Lord Ram shows. So in that regard, he is known as Maryada Purushottama. Purushottama, of course, means supreme person. Krishna is called Leela Purushottama, the supreme person whose particular characteristic, feature of who he is and what he is his pastimes, the most incredible pastimes. And then Lord Chaitanya is Prema Purushottama, the supreme person whose particular characteristic is his love. But Lord Ram, he is Maryada Purushottama, which means the supreme person whose particular characteristic is, feature of his nature is, that he sticks to the rules and regulations. And that's all. You cannot sway him from that at all. So as he said here, we read, Ram does not speak twice. I read some years ago a warning about politicians. That they say, you know, we'll do something. Then after a while, if it's not going so well, they say, well, on the other hand, maybe we'll do something else. And if things aren't working so well in that direction, then they say, well, on another hand, so whoever it was said, we have multi-handed politicians. Multi-handed, yes, flexi-speech, nothing should be taken seriously unless it actually happens. Even then they might take it back. But Lord Ram does not speak twice. So it's a very important, you know, in terms of lessons for us in terms of our personal application, personal practice of Krishna consciousness, this is a very important lesson, that we should really be very honest and straightforward. and be very wary of getting into using untruth. You know, sometimes it's said there's a place for that in Krishna consciousness, but there's not a very big place, particularly for people like us. Rather, as Prabhupada said, that we should become known for being first-class gentlemen and gentleladies, and not just first-class tricksters and cheats. There was a period, particularly in America, where it was becoming something like that, devotees distributing books, and in order to get people to take a book, they'd say anything, even literally anything. There's an exchange if you have Prabhupada's books and classes, etc., on computer. There's an exchange included there between Prabhupada and one lady, who bought a book from a devotee who told her that if you read this book, it will help solve the energy crisis. At that time, it was in the sort of mid-70s or something like that. And I don't know how many of you were around in those days, but maybe you can remember in this country, you couldn't buy petrol on a Sunday. You remember that? And in other countries, petrol was rationed because they thought we're going to run out of petrol. I mean, we are going to run out, actually. But at the moment, they don't really care. So, but in those days, they were worried. So the talk was, there was a lot of talk about energy crisis. And the devotee told the lady, gave her a Srimad Bhagavatam and told her, if you read this book, you'll be able to solve the energy crisis. And she read the book and it was all about Krishna. Well, you know, it's Srimad Bhagavatam. So she wrote to Prabhupada. And there's an exchange between her and Prabhupada in which Prabhupada, to some degree, it is justifying. Yeah, is justifying saying like that and at least saying that, well, you know, he was trying to help you, you should appreciate that. But devotees really got carried away and became famous for being dishonest, just saying whatever it takes to get you to buy the book. Yeah, and it became a crisis, actually. It was quite amazing. And as it became a crisis, then Prabhupada emphasized more and more how we, as devotees, we really need to be honest, straightforward, so people will appreciate that, oh, these people are like this. They're really good people, like outstanding people, not like your ordinary person who says one thing one moment and then may say something different shortly after. So that's something to bear in mind as a lesson from Ram Leela in general. Here's another thing I want you to bear in mind as a lesson from Ram Leela. Just give me a moment. And I want to read to you when Lord Ram was told that he's going to go into exile. He has to go into exile. that he went to say goodbye to his mother, to Kausalya, first, and you know, she didn't want him to go. But anyway, okay, he sort of managed to get her to accept it. Then he had to go and say goodbye to Sita. But Sita would not accept it. And Lord Ram came to Sita and said that, you know, explained a little bit what had happened and said, so I'm going to go into exile for 14 years. And Sita Devi said, when are we leaving? And Ram said, we are not leaving. I am leaving. Because it's not appropriate for you as a lady. And Sita said, no. It is appropriate. It's not just appropriate, but it's totally unavoidable. Because you're my husband. So, let me just read what she said. And this is another lesson in terms of uprightness of character. Yeah, righteousness, morality, and steadfastness in terms of duty. Father, mother, brother, son, and daughter-in-law enjoy their particular good fortune according to their pious activities. But the wife alone achieves the same fortune as her husband. Therefore, as you have been banished to the forest, I also am ordered to reside in the forest. For a married woman, neither her father, her own body, her mother, nor her girlfriends are ever her shelter in this world or in death. Only her husband is. If you leave for the forest today, I will walk ahead of you, crushing the sharp thorns and blades of kusha grass with my bare feet, in this way sparing your feet from any pain. I'll walk before you, scouting for danger, and will only eat the remnants of your food, casting away your envy at my courage and your anger at my disobedience to stay in Ayodhya. Take me with you without any hesitation. There is no sin in me for which I should be left behind. In all circumstances, shelter in the shade of the feet of one's husband is better than residence in a palace, in an aircraft, or travel through outer space. I do not need any instruction at this time regarding how I should act. Not taking any servants, I shall enter the jungle, which is full of many different wild beasts and packs of tigers. Disregarding sovereignty over the three worlds and thinking only of my vow to my husband, I shall reside as happily in the wilderness as I would in my father's palace. I will no doubt accompany you to the forest today. I cannot be stopped. I shall undoubtedly eat fruits and roots every day and will not trouble you while living with you. Furthermore, I wish to fearlessly see the mountains, ponds, and lakes being protected by you. I shall happily live thousands of years or hundreds of thousands of years with you in that way. What to speak of 14 years? Indeed, if residence in heaven were available without you, I would not accept it. Clinging to your feet and being loved by you, I shall live in that wilderness as if in my father's house. So please grant my request and take me along. I am exclusively devoted to you, and my mind is attached to you. Without you, I would certainly die. In my life, I in my life, I've never even mentally looked at another man, as do women who disgrace their families. You know, of course, not every lady is a Sita, and not every husband is a Ra. So, you know, but it's food for thought. These things are definitely food for thought. Yeah. And, you know, very noble and very rich and extremely deep that there are people like this. There actually are people like this. And it's possible to follow in the footsteps of people who are like that. And if not become, you know, exactly like that, but at least to make progress in that sort of direction. So, we'll close in a minute. What I want to do is tell you one last little story. Last little story. Just to finish off for today. And then we'll continue tomorrow. It's a famous story, I imagine. Probably all of you are familiar with it, but it's nice to hear these things again, is that when Lord Ram and Sita and Lakshman, let me just mention before we go into that, that Lakshman also told Ram, I'm coming. He didn't have to go. There was no instruction for him to go into exile. That he went to protect. And he told Lord Ram, I will stay awake for 14 years. I will stay awake the whole time, 24 hours a day, to make sure no danger comes. So his wife, Urmila, said, what about me? And Lakshman told her, you can sleep for me. I will not sleep. You sleep for me. So she did that as a service to her husband. She slept for 14 years. And he stayed awake for 14 years. And the connection between them as husband and wife was such that her sleeping kept him awake. And he stayed awake for 14 years. These relationships, sure, it's another dimension, of course, but it's something to consider and to pray for some mercy that we may get some strength to follow in the footsteps. But anyway, this last little story, when the three of them were now in exile, and they're moving from Ayodhya, moving down to the southeast, and they came to the Sarayu River they had to cross. So they needed a boat to cross. So there was one boatman. And they got on the boat and, can you take us across? Sure. And off they went. And they asked, as they're going, so how much? How much do we have to pay you? The boatman knew who Lord Ram was. How much should we pay you? And the boatman said, no, don't worry. It's all right. You don't need to pay. And Lord Ram said, no, I'm a Kshatriya. I cannot accept charity. I cannot accept charity. I can give, but I cannot accept. So I must pay how much? And the boatman said, no, you don't need to pay. Because we have a rule here in this area amongst the boatman community. The rule is that if a boatman takes another boatman on his boat, then he doesn't charge the other boatman. We don't charge each other. We give each other free rides if there's a need. The boatman said, so you're a boatman, and I will not charge you. And Lord Ram said, what do you mean I'm a boatman? I'm not a boatman. I'm a Kshatriya. I'm not a boatman, and I must pay you. How much? And Lord Ram told Sita, or maybe Mother Sita offered, she had a pearl necklace, she took it off. And Lord Ram said, take this, we're not going to need it, we're in exile, you take this as payment. But the boatman said, no, 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 I can't, you're a boatman, I cannot take anything from you. And Lord Ram said, what do you mean I'm a boatman? And the boatman said, I'm a little boatman. I just take people from one side of this river to the other. But you're a big boatman. You take people from one side of the ocean of birth and death across to the other side, beyond birth and death. So you're a boatman. You're a big boatman. And Lord Ram sort of, he appreciated the idea. He smiled. And the boatman said, but I want to make a deal with you that as I am giving you this ride free of charge, when the time comes and I leave my body, I want you to take me across to the other side of the ocean of birth and death free of charge. Is that all right? Lord Ram said, yes, all right. Hare Krishna. Hare Rama. Sri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ke. Sri Ram Nomi Mahotsava ke. Sri La Prabhupada ke. Go Premanande. So we'll have just a... you want to say something, is it? Oh, questions. Sorry.
You can post it on.
I can't hear you.
If anyone has questions, if you can post it on Maharaj's Facebook page, or you could ask a live one, but ask loud.
Anyone got a question? Any point they'd like to raise? Tomorrow we'll have a question sheet. Oh.
Tomorrow, the protocol will be that you raise your question on Maharaj's Facebook page, or you can WhatsApp it to the number that you added.
Okay. Yes, please, Maharaji. Loud and clear. How did he fulfill her desire? Yeah. Well, we did mention when he incarnated as Srinivas. This is not Srinivas from Chaitanya Leela. It's Srinivas from South India, who is the deity. I don't know, did you ever go to Tirupati? But you've been to India, right? Anyway, Tirupati, South India, Andhra Pradesh. The deity is popularly known as Venkateshwar or Balaji, but actually he was a person who turned into the deity, a person named Srinivas, yeah, who is the Lord. So the Maya Sita, who was born as the daughter of the king of, oh, I forget, Kola something, down there in South India, there's a big Mahalakshmi temple. Anyway, yeah, she was married to Srinivas, who is Lord Ram, or Lord Krishna, you know. That's it. Is that okay? Hare Krishna.